Hey Bruins! This week on BSP, we chat with Mina Badmagarian, occupational therapist and clinical director at Expert Technologies.
To start us off, as we do with all our episodes, tell us about what you studied at UCLA and what you've done leading up to your current role.
Sure. Hello. My name is Mina. At UCLA, I studied psychology. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. From there, I did so many things. I was very confused about where I wanted to go after UCLA. So I took a gap year, more than a year, maybe 2 years after UCLA. And I tried many, many things. But primarily, my passion was focused on kids. I love kids and I wanted to do something with mental health. Wasn't sure what. So for about 2 years, I tried ABA, which is applied behavioral therapy with children. I worked at schools. I kind of wanted to try different settings, home settings, clinics, schools. I did all of that. And I really enjoyed working with kids. But I was looking for something more. I wasn't sure what. And at that time, I had no idea what occupational therapy was. But one day while I was at a school, working, I saw a therapist approach one of the students, and they played lots of games together and they had so much fun together. And I approached her. I remember I asked, "What is it that you're doing?" And she said she's an occupational therapist. And that was it. From that point, I knew. I said, "This is what I want to do. I need to become an occupational therapist." But I had no idea even what the word occupation meant at the time. It was all very confusing. So what I did from there was I started researching. I volunteered at a couple of locations at a nursing home, again, with another school occupational therapist. And I learned, I became more certain that that's what I wanted to do. I took some prereq courses at a community college, and then I applied to universities. So I got into USC. It was very exciting. I know USC, but that's the only university that had occupational therapy. I didn't know anything about USC at that point. So I started my studies at USC. And I knew that in my life, I always knew that I wanted to go back to my country, Armenia. I'm Armenian. I wanted to go back and do something, give back. I moved to the United States when I was 12. I always missed Armenia. I just wanted to do something. Wanted to have more of a connection to my community as well. So when I got into USC, I remember I learned about the doctorate program and the residency. And I remember I walked up to the fieldwork coordinator at the time. I said, "Can I do this in another country?" It was very uncertain, but I was very lucky. I don't know, universe kind of gave me everything, planned everything. So the person, fieldwork coordinator, who was responsible for the program, she went to Armenia 20 years ago. And she did volunteer work with the Red Cross. So she is very familiar with Armenia. Not a lot of people are. She said, "I will make it happen." So I was very happy for that. So what I did was I studied. I got my master's in occupational therapy at USC. And then I continued on to do my residency in Armenia. So although I am from Armenia, I wasn't familiar with the mental health setting because I came here when I was very young. So I had to go back and kind of research that area, learn more about it. So I traveled to Armenia. My family was very against it. They were so scared for me. I'm an only child, so they wanted to keep me here safe and sound. It was a very hard decision to make, very hard decision, because one part of my mind wanted to stay here with a very certain residency location that I knew I would learn this, 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 and that, and I might have a very high chance of getting hired afterwards and kind of be stable. And that part of Mina's brain wanted the stability that's why I'm getting my degree and I'm gonna have a job and I'll be making this much money. But the other side of Mina, which is more usually more powerful, like, no, you have to do what you think you have to do. My heart was telling me to do it, so I followed that. I traveled to Armenia. I found there is only one site who was doing community mental health at the time. So I joined the team there. I worked for 2 3 weeks there, and COVID started. So that was when the pandemic started. And again, I had a choice. Do I come back? Do I stay? I was away from my family again. Everything was uncertain and scary. And I get so anxious about getting sick all the time. But again, I made the decision to stay there and just ride through the waves that were coming. One of the best decisions I made, I always say this. So I stayed there. I completed my residency with online courses and did some of the therapy through the phone with the client. So everything worked out. I got so lucky actually to do my residential presentation online because I'm always so shy. I didn't want to do it physically in front of so many people, but I got to do it online. It was great. And then while I was in Armenia at a random cafe one day, I met two people, the CEO and co-founder of Expert Technologies, and they were a startup. Two tech guys who were building a robot. And we got to know each other, and they asked me what I do, and they told me they are building a robot and they want to move it to the United States, the US market. And they were so happy that I was from the USA and that I studied psychology and OT. And they just asked me to join them. And at the time, I didn't know what the word startup meant, honestly. I am not a tech savvy person. I had no idea about robots, nothing, no clue, zero. So what they did was they invited me to a hospital where they were completing their first study with children who were hospitalized. And I think seeing that sight and seeing a child interact with a robot who was so cute, just I was so sold. So I joined their team. It was a different work culture, startup culture. I was not used to it. There was a lot of things on the computer. I was not used to that. And even them communicating with each other about all these words about technology and startups and investors and pitching the company. So new, so scary. I had just studied OT. But I joined them. I joined them. It was very exciting. I worked at night hours, because we were working. There's a 12-hour difference from Armenia to LA time. So I would stay up at night and work, which was fun. I'm a night person, so it worked out great. And then fast forward to about 3.5 years, and I am currently the clinical director at Expert Technologies, and we built Robin the Robot, which is a social emotional robot.
I love your story because I want to circle back to. I love how you said there's two parts to you, the one that wants the stableness, and then the part that usually wins, which is follow your heart, which normally that's not the side that wins for people. I want to dive into more of what made you take that leap.
Oh, great question. Not easy. They are always fighting with each other. I feel that as an immigrant coming to the United States, I was responsible for making a lot of hard decisions for myself. I didn't have the advice from my parents because they weren't familiar with the educational system. I made all my decisions, but it was really hard. I did meditating, I did reading, I used to go to the parks and I would decide. So today I'm gonna walk for an hour and I'm gonna have decisions. I talked to many people, and I would I remember I had a paper and I would write for Armenia, not for Armenia, and I would write down all these details. But then one day, I just listened to my heart, because maybe previously past experiences, when I listened to my heart, everything went the right way. So I guess that also helped.
Even the going on a walk and I'm gonna have something decided, I think is, I had need to have that more.
So I want to circle back to when you decided to combine your love of occupational therapy with and working with children with technology. When that became an option, how did you go about learning more and paving your way to find how this would best work? Was this a field that was developing rapidly, or I'd love to hear more about that experience.
I remember approaching it very cautiously. In the beginning, I didn't want to learn much about technology. I was just sticking to what I knew. So I was mostly about psychology and what's Robin going to say to kids. That's what I started doing. So I started designing a lot of dialogues, which was all psychology. But then I learned that I can't not learn about technology because I'm working with the team. So slowly I kind of tiptoed into all the terminology, and I think the team was a huge help. So they just kind of taught me everything I know now.
Which is so interesting. You're at such a, unique crossroads, right? Because again, the technology, the psychology of it. So tell us a little bit more about Robin the robot.
So Robin is a social emotional robot. Robin is 7 years old, and Robin's mission is to help children who are undergoing challenging moments in their life, mainly medical conditions. So they're at the hospital or they're going to see a doctor, and Robin is there to help them feel more comfortable, ease their anxiety and stress, and also help the staff at these locations. I always describe Robin as a light in a sometimes not very light moment, or in a dark moment, Robin just kind of spreads positivity and joy wherever it goes.
When it comes to interacting with Robin, is it sort of like an AI type experience where everything's real time and you're getting responses based off of your input? And especially a robot dealing with emotions, how does that work? How do the interactions work with the kids?
Very complicated. I'll try my best to answer this question. So our technology is called human-assisted AI. It's when we have live child psychologists or child life interaction specialists who monitor all the conversations that Robin has with children and anyone it talks to. So there's that monitoring that goes on, but also a lot of AI that we're developing right now. And we base it off of real conversations that the children have with Robin. I can give you a very simple example. It might clarify things. So when I just joined the team, I wanted to learn more about how children talk to a robot. Will they even talk? How will they react? Will they be scared? And then I started building Robin's personality off of that. For example, we would ask children, what's your favorite animal? And they would answer, and they would ask Robin the same question. And Robin would try different responses. So Robin would say, a panda, and we would see how the children react. And then next time it would say, a dog, and we'll see the reactions. And we tried the chicken. And when Robin said, chicken, every kid would say, oh, he likes chickens. And they would start laughing and doing the chicken dance. And we would say, okay, this is Robin's favorite animal. And we designed that with every question and every response and reaction we got. And we built Robin's personality based off of that. So now the AI works using those responses, which give us the best reaction.
I love how kids would start the chicken dance. That makes me so
Yes.
happy.
Yes.
Oh, just to like even like see the joy on their faces for that would be priceless.
It's the best.
I'm curious how this technology has been integrated into this sort of setting It's definitely not traditional. It's something out of a sci-fi movie almost, where you're feeling sad, you're going through something really difficult, and there's a robot that's comforting you. What has the reception been for patients, parents, hospital staff who are working with the robot?
It's very unusual in the beginning. So we do a lot of demos where we take Robin to different sites. And in the beginning, there is this very unusual stare at Robin. Like, why is a robot here? And Robin is very slow. Robin like, walks super slow. And Robin has this huge googly eyes, and it smiles. And people in the beginning don't know what to say. Is it like Alexa? A lot of kids say, "Alexa, play this music," when they first meet Robin, because that's what they're used to. So adults are more apprehensive when they first meet Robin, but children open up to Robin more easily. As soon as Robin says, "Hi, my name is Robin," and says, "Let's play hide and seek together," everyone starts liking Robin and they change their mind and they feel good about their interaction with Robin. Makes them very happy and they start liking Robin. Robin is super silly. I think that's very helpful.
That's so sweet. I love that. Let's play hide and seek. And I also just love children's like curiosity, right? I feel like some of our childlike curiosity goes away as we get older, but they are
Yes.
always learning and curious. And so I love to see that translate to Robin too, of they just want
Yes.
to play and have fun. This is a new friend.
Yes, exactly. Very well put.
In your experience working with Robin and working with children, do you find yourself thinking more like how a child would when you're trying to do your work of what would be helpful or the sort of openness and optimism that a lot of children have?
Yes, I think I do that. That's my main role at Expert. So I train people how to be 7-year-olds. It's not easy, believe it or not, though. That's what I do all day. I have become so good at it. I feel that in my daily life too. I use more of my inner child. I even talk like Robin sometimes. Robin is super happy all the time and super joyful no matter the situation. So Robin, for example, doesn't say good morning. Robin says good morning. So I think I'm turning a little bit like a robot too, and all of my teammates. So that's what I do on a daily basis.
Sounds like you hit the nail on the head, Sarah.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. What would you say is the most challenging part of working with Robin and all of these people that are also learning to work with Robin?
I would say being able to turn off adultness a little bit. And with that comes a lot of assumptions and biases and all of those things, and turning up your inner child and joy and non-judgment, all the good qualities, and being able to do that, being very stable with that. I think that's the most challenging part.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, right? Like, kind of going back to these things as you grow older from being a child, and biases develop, and kind of more narrow points of view. Again, that curiosity can sometimes go away, and so it's so refreshing to like revert back to that thinking a little bit of, yeah, let me just ask all the questions. Let me just try and be that inner child come out a little bit more.
I think with self-awareness too, the older you get, there comes more self-criticism and just a general awareness that other people are perceiving you too. So there's more self-perception, and it's interesting to put that on a shelf for a little while and just think about the world or go about the world the way kids do, which is definitely a lot less judgmental than adults. What would you say is the most unexpected part of working with Robin?
Just seeing how open people are to an interaction with the robot, how much they can share about their personal emotions, what they're going through, and how empowering that is for everyone to teach Robin something, to share about their emotions. And as you mentioned before, I think that's a huge component of it. Robin never judges anyone, and I think that what's make a very meaningful connection. But I think that's been most surprising, especially with the elderly and how they connect with Robin. That was very surprising too, because they open-heartedly accept Robin and they treat Robin as a grandchild, which is so sweet to see.
Being an adult, but a relatively open-minded adult, I would also be a little skeptical right off the bat, wondering, okay, who is Robin exactly? Who am I actually talking to? And I don't know if I want to share my thoughts and my emotions with this robot, but that's great that people have been so willing to try and able to integrate that into their treatment plans. What would you say has been the most rewarding part of working on the team that works on Robin?
I love our team, I think mainly because we are so different. We have team members in many parts of the world, so from Vietnam to Canada to Russia to Lebanon, Armenia, the USA. So we are multicultural and multidisciplinary. We have a software guy, an OT, a psychologist, we have a salesperson, and another person who only builds the memories of the robot. So I think that's the most exciting part. And I love to learn about different fields every day. It's something I would never think I would do, but now I am, and I love it.
It just feels like it's such rewarding work to, bring a smile to someone during what could be a hard day, and dealing with all that, especially kids, right? Like, you never want to see them in pain, you never want to see them hurt. And so to help bring a smile to their face seems like it could be such a rewarding part.
Yes, I think it's so much rewarding. Not easy witnessing children undergoing all these difficult moments, but when Robin is able to help just a tiny bit, put a smile on a child's face, I think we share that every morning, and all of us become so happy and get motivated to do more and more.
I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this with company secrecy and all that, but I would love to hear more about the direction that you think this technology in this particular setting could be going in on your specific team or just in general in the world.
I would focus on our team. So our mission is to spread kindness to everybody. So we figured that hardware is a little bit limiting, in reaching many people, many men, too many people. So we are looking into going into a software route, and that is building an app in order to be able to reach more and more people. Coming soon.
That's amazing.
Yes, thank you. A lot of the kids who interact with Robin in medical facilities, they want to take Robin home. Like, please come home with me. I want to take you. So Robin says, but this is my home. You can come visit me. So we thought about it, and we will give kids that in an app format, hopefully.
That's so sweet. Oh, that just made my day. We truly are living in the future. This is amazing. So, also kind of, talking about the future of work, kind of along those lines, but slightly different. What's maybe a myth about the work that you do or the industry that you work in that you want to bust? Something that is maybe what everyone may assume about your industry.
So gladly, I will bust the myths. So you don't have to be a programmer to get involved with the startup world. You don't have to know much about tech. There is so much need in the tech industry for other professionals from different fields. You can learn and you can contribute so much, and it's so much fun to look outside the box where when you're choosing what to do.
Who could have thought and brought to life a robot that has those emotional components of it, right? Like, you need to be able to think out of the box. Someone that's in tech, they knew they didn't have the skill set for that. So you need to have more people in the room for a conversation. So I think that's a
Yes.
great thing to bust.
Honestly, wise words and the perfect segue into our final question, which is, do you have any advice for our alumni?
Might be cliche to say, but follow your gut, and no matter what anyone says, what feels right for you, follow that. And also, success can look different for different people. Find out what that means for you and try to reach that.
I'm so glad we had you today because you hit it on the head. Success is different for everyone, and that's what we hope to do with this podcast, is show everyone's success and what that means to them. Thank you so much for our conversation today. It's been so lovely talking to you and sharing your story. And to our listeners out there, go Bruins!
The UCLA Alumni Association supports more than 660,000 Bruins worldwide with programs like the Bruin Success Podcast. Donations to the UCLA Alumni Association Support Fund help strengthen the Bruin community through impactful programs like this. You can make a donation and become a UCLA Alumni Association sustaining donor by visiting giving.ucla.edu/alumni. Thank you to all of our sustaining donors.